Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience. And, besides that, he's really weird. Welcome to the Mark Unger Show with national marriage speaker and author of Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage, Mark Unger. This is your source for practical, down-to-earth marriage advice without all the over-spiritualization or romantic nonsense. And now the host of the Mark Unger Show, Mark Unger.
With delirious joy, they've joined the Mark Unger Show, the show that deals with all things concerning
marriage.
Indeed.
Marriage is what brings us together today.
I am, of course, your host, Mark Unger.
Good. We can finally start the big meeting.
Joining me, as always, the lovely and charming Diane Brierley.
Ah, he's completely lost his mind.
And, of course, the incredible Ross Allen Skorzewski.
Your boy's different.
Indeed he is.
Mm-hmm, very.
This is a show that handles all of your marital challenges, relationship conundrums, and dating dilemmas that you can email to us. Oh, I forgot to mention, this show is engineered by the very talented but eerily creepy Timothy Robert Ray, engineer extraordinaire and part-time serial killer. What we do on this show is you can send us an email about anything, remain totally anonymous, and then we, in turn, are brutally honest. That's how the show works. While everybody is so consumed in the world today about how people feel, and we can't do things if people will feel bad, and churches are consumed, and pastors are drooling, or all of everybody's feeling, we don't talk about anything. This is the anti-feeling show. This show, we don't care how anybody feels. We just don't care. Feelings enter into this. Zero zilch nada. Mm-hmm. That is the premise of the program. If that shocks you, then don't email us. Or if it's too shocking to watch, then don't watch it. It's very simple. This is the anti-feeling show. We're just going to talk to you about the truth. And we will do it in a way that has no regard for your feelings in any way, shape, or form. It is the premise of the program. It is an exaggerated expression, really to try and counter, juxtaposed against the nonsense that we have today, where everybody's so concerned about feelings. In reality, generally, I'm not that mean. You don't take someone you don't know and just hammer them with the truth.
Okay? No.
All right. Now, I might talk to you that way if I've been talking to you for a long time and you keep doing the same dumb thing over. I'll probably go off on you at some point.
Yeah.
But this show, we don't even give you we don't take the time to get to know you. We immediately respond like we've been dealing with you for 6 years and you're having this problem.
Yes.
That's what you're hearing on this show. All right. Look at that. I got a tie on today.
I know. You're sitting there tied and jacketed up.
Look at Chicky Lou. Look at her.
I am so warm. I could just...
Well, look at all your sparkly dealy bobbies and the thing. You're just very... And then look at Ross. He's just ugly.
No, that's a cool shirt Ross has on.
Let me refrain from saying things that really come to mind and from performing gestures that also come to mind. I am the epitome of self-control and restraint and humility.
You don't do what you feel. We don't live by how we feel.
We don't.
We live by the right things to do.
Because I feel.
I felt wear a tie today.
You look good.
I don't know why. I just,
you look hot, but you look good.
Should I do this every day? Should I wear a tie every day? Why not?
I like it.
I got my pinstripes on.
Because then I'm going to have to one up you.
Well, and?
If he's wearing a tie, then I have to wear some sort of a ball gown or something.
Well, you're pretty slick. You're decked out. You look like you're going to the ball yourself.
Okay.
Fine.
Cinderella.
No. Anyway, okay, what do you got for us today?
This actually is a little story about how much a mom's job is worth. A new report claims that most moms are very undervalued when it comes to the amount of work they do. Salary.com has just released a study claiming that a stay-at-home mother is worth a salary of $112,000 a year based on what she does and the hours worked.
That's probably very, very true, which really what ticked off a lot of people when some liberal psycho went off instead of criticizing Ann Romney. Saying she hadn't worked a day in her life.
Yes.
She's a stay-at-home mom. Hasn't worked a day in her life.
Oh, clearly, really? Hasn't worked a day in her life?
Clearly, you've never stayed at home with a bunch of little monkeys because it'll drive you crazy. Anyway, go ahead.
It says the average stay-at-home mom works 94.7 hours a week. It then looks at that average wage paid to people who specialized in what she does. For instance, a cook earns an average of $13 an hour, mm-hmm. while a family psychologist earns $36 an hour.
$36 an hour?
That seems cheap to me. Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought. Total it up, you get an annual income of $112,000. Salary.com says a working woman who works 40 hours outside the home and then 57 hours a week inside the home is only worth $66,000 a year.
And add in the sex that he has with her husband.
It's priceless.
You got a bunch of hookers to get that. It's going to cost you a fortune.
That's right. Apparently, the insurance industry, it says, is not so generous. The insurance industry claims the value of a stay-at-home mom is only $60,000 a year.
Still a lot higher than a lot of people think.
Oh, yeah. So they say, don't believe it. Guys, just try getting a divorce and then hiring a full-time nanny, cook,
absolutely.
And cleaning person. And don't forget a budget planner and family organizer. Some people would call that priceless.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, though, that his wife feels overwhelmed. And, you know, they seem to be doing pretty well. He's got his own businesses and mm-hmm. stuff. And so I said, well, can't you just hire a cleaning lady to come in and clean? And he says, I tried.
But she
won't have it.
I said, let me guess. She cleans the house before the cleaning lady gets there. And he starts laughing. He says, yeah, how did you know?
I know lots of women do that. That would not be me.
My wife, would you do that, Nancy? Yes. Would you? You would? Look at her. She would clean.
Because it's their house. It's their domain. It's embarrassing.
Can you be more crazy?
Yes.
It's a cleaning lady. She's there to clean. So if I went to get, because I could afford, I would do this for my wife.
Yes.
She has to clean up. And we travel on the road so much, mm-hmm. right?
She would consider it a waste of money, though.
And then I'm telling you, it's not about money to her. It's just that she's a typical woman who would want to clean before the cleaning lady got there. So the cleaning lady didn't think she was a slob.
See, and that's not
me. They want you to be a slob. It's called job security.
Yes. I would pick up the clutter and things that she needed to have out of the way in order to clean. But that's all I did. I did
Handy's
not
handle.
It's not like when you go to the car shop. Guy before he gets his oil changed, and steam down the engine so there's no oil in there, and get everything right and change all the spark plugs and put on new, you know, everything so that when he gets his oil changed, you know,
Let me wash my car a little bit before I have you wash it.
So that when the guy cleans the oil, he goes, man, I got to say, this is really impressive. You had the cleanest engine. Yeah. In fact, it seemed like your oil didn't need to be changed at all.
Right.
Yes, because he changed it already. Now, if a man did that, you'd think he's crazy. Women are crazy. So they get crazy because you want to hire a cooking lady or a cleaning lady or whatever else, and they get all crazy because they got to clean before the cleaning lady.
I know people do. I wouldn't.
I'm telling my wife this way. If I were my wife,
I'd clean. Lady's coming.
I would let them come.
Yeah.
We've been on the road for, 6 days in a row. We come home for a day. I'm going to spend all day cleaning. That's what she does.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Vacuuming.
No.
Why in
no,
the heck?
No,
get somebody
else to
do it. I did
not do that. It's like the bathroom. Because I have lotions and potions and makeup and everything.
You're a witch.
I'm high maintenance, boys. Come on, I'm high maintenance. Takes a lot to look this good.
She's got her lotions and potions.
I had to put it.
Witch. I knew it.
Put it all in the drawers and stuff so at least she could come in and clean the sink.
No.
I mean, I didn't. That's a lot of junk for her to have to move around.
Is it soothing for her? Does she find, is it therapeutic?
But that's the most that I did. I didn't
clean. Vacuum after being gone.
The other thing is I don't like people touching my stuff.
I think it's just work for
her. How do I turn Diane off?
Don't touch my stuff. Don't touch my stuff.
So I don't know. All I know is I think it's a little crazy. What else can I say? It's who they are. We love them. You can't live with them.
No, you don't.
You can't live without them. We're obsessed by these beautiful creatures called women.
Yes. Hey, there's a payoff in there, boys. There's a payoff.
There is payoff.
Anyway, okay, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with your emails right after this.
He's a pastor, best-selling author, and popular marriage speaker. He's Mark Unger, bringing you hard-hitting and honest marriage advice.
That dress makes you look fat.
don't say that.
Yes, it brings down.
Those jeans really make your butt
don't say that.
I just thought I needed to say it.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
I would disagree with that advice there.
That's
all right.
Right. Okay, this email says, love the study on Jesus' teaching. So he must be listening to your Matthew series.
Yeah, a lot of people can listen to us online. If you just go to markgunger.com, you can see all my links to the church and everything else that I do. Mm-hmm. Or to celebrationchurch.tv. Actually, we stream our services now live on Sunday morning. So people all over the world, if you'd like to actually watch our services, can watch and listen. Yes. People always say, well, I wonder what it's like when you preach. Well, now you can see.
And you can see Ross sing sometimes.
That's right. There. Skeeter's up there. He's singing. And
yep.
It's very cool.
Okay, so he continues saying, I'm very frustrated with the lack of desiring for more of God. I wish I could smoke the everyday Christians with a 2x4 and say, wake up, morons.
Signed, Mark Gunger.
Love the in-your-face teaching. He wants to know, why do Christians go to church every Sunday and never truly fall in love with Jesus? Is this just a show? How do we smoke these people with the 2x4 without
smoke
actually doing
smoked?
It? He's smoke. Saying smoke, but I think he means smote. I think he means smote. Mm-hmm.
Or smite.
If you hit them hard enough, they'll smoke, I suppose.
Yeah. He says, if they could just see the fire they're playing with, they just don't understand the importance of being 100% sold out. Thanks for helping my family be totally sold out Christians. I listen to 4 to 6 messages a day and listen to them 15 to 20 times each.
Of my messages?
Apparently.
Good night.
Wow. There's a
That's indoctrination. He wants to know, so what is wrong with these everyday wussy Christian adults? These people really anger me.
Is he a stalker?
Maybe.
Right.
These people really anger me. How do you not let these people tick you off?
Are you kidding?
Do you watch the show? He gets ticked off.
All I do is get ticked off.
We don't do the not get ticked off thing very easily.
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know why anybody comes to my church.
It's easy to get mad.
Because I'm pretty brutal of people. I don't get it. I don't know. Dude, I would love to know. The only thing I can think is people deceive themselves. Mm-hmm. They live in a sense of deception. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. The Bible warns against deceiving yourself. That's what these people do. They deceive themselves into this delusional state. They think they're something that they're not. Why do people come to church even though they don't take it seriously? In a word, two words, fire insurance.
Mm-hmm. Fire insurance.
To a lot of people, church is just fire insurance. Yeah. They might go to hell. They're not sure. So if I just go and listen to somebody preach for a bit and sing some songs, take communion, that's fire insurance. Mm-hmm. They don't have a passion for God. Look, Jesus said, on that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord. And he's going to look at him and say, I have no idea who you are. And they'll be cast out, weeping and gnashing of teeth.
Many. That's a scary word.
It's not a few. We got some people going around and saying, there's no hell today. Really? That's not how I view the Bible. In fact, the way I read it, most people are going to hell. Most. They're just flat out. It's just the truth. I don't say that casually. I mean, sad. I mean, that's why we do what we do, to preach the gospel and share people and challenge them to righteous living. And Jesus said, broad is the way that leads to destruction. Many will go that way. Narrow is the way. Have you ever heard the road of the narrow road? Mm-hmm. Narrow is the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it. And I think that even applies to a great deal of people who walk inside church doors.
Yeah.
You talk to a lot of pastors. I mean, I kid you not, I talk to a lot of pastors who say, I'm not convinced most of my people in church are even saved. Yeah. Sometimes I wonder about
that. But they think they are. I mean, the people attending think they are.
And it's not our job to say that they're not.
Right.
It's not our job to judge them. I mean, that's just
that's for them to figure out.
I got some in my mouth here. Sorry. Help my throat. But it's just a general statement based on how people live. And how they respond, whether or not they give money. I mean, you stop and think that most churches are supported by about 10 to 12% of the people that attend, which means a good 80% of the people come to church, 80%, and don't give anything. Mm-hmm. Or maybe throw a buck in the offer. I mean, it's nothing. It's inconsequential. And you just got to wonder, are these people even saved? It wouldn't surprise me if a big chunk of people go to my church. Mm-hmm. Don't know Jesus at all. They know about Jesus. Look, I know people in my church, and they know this, and we talk to them specifically about it. They go to my church, and they love it, and they're living in sin.
Yes.
They're just blatantly, openly fornicating their little brains out and think there's nothing wrong with it.
Even what though you've said 150.
We don't do anything. We tell them the truth. And we still love them. We're kind to them. But look, I'm not your judge. You're not going to have to listen to me someday on judge. You're going to have to explain that to Jesus someday.
Mm-hmm. But you told them. At least you told them.
I have told them on many occasions, you know. Mm-hmm. I just talked on Sunday about, where Jesus said, if you don't forgive people who sin against you, God won't forgive you. Now, that's radical. Are you saying God won't forgive me? No. Mm-hmm. That's what Jesus said. Right.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying what Jesus said.
Jesus. I just read to them what Jesus. Yeah. And then later people say, you know, Pastor Mark said such and such. No, Pastor Mark didn't say that. Jesus said it. Yeah. I read to you what he said. And then they get mad at me.
I'm only reading the Bible,
I
folks.
Didn't make it up. He said it. You know, you read the verse about divorce. A lot of people get mad.
I know.
Jesus said, if you divorce your wife and marry somebody else, you're committing adultery. And then people get mad. You said I committed adultery. No, I didn't say that. Yes, you did. No, that's what Jesus said. I didn't say it. Now, are you doomed if you've done it? No, you just need to repent. You need to ask God to forgive you, and you move on. Okay? Lots of people have made mistakes. Tons of people have made mistakes. Everybody sins. I get it. But you need to make it right. You need to repent and do. But lots of people just do it casually. I can divorce my wife alone. It doesn't matter. I don't feel respected like I should. I don't feel I'm treated like this. Spiritual head of the whole. Can you see my head? It's spiritual. Just the head itself is very spiritual. That's how you can tell I'm spiritual, because my head is spiritual. I'm the spiritual head of my home. And I don't feel like I'm being the spiritual. So I'm going to divorce my wife and marry some nice girl who just happens to be 15 years younger and bigger boobs. That's just a coincidence.
But she's going to treat me
She's going to treat me with respect. Yeah. Really? You think that's okay? Well, yes, because God understands. God doesn't expect me to be in a loveless marriage. Really? Mm-hmm. That's not what I read. What I read is God expects you to stay married, period. Yep. Period. End of story. Unless they're being sexually unfaithful. That changes it. Short of that, were you saying that I can't just divorce my husband and get married? I didn't say that. Jesus said that. Anyway, we're just a weird version of Christianity today. We are Christians today who don't know what Jesus taught and don't believe what Jesus taught. That is the truth. And then there's a remnant. There's people all over the world. I'm not the only one. Good Lord, it's not me. There's hundreds of thousands of men out there who are preaching the gospel and doing the right thing. They don't always have the biggest churches, you know, but for a lot of us, that's not what we're called to do. We're not just supposed to attract lots of people. We're supposed to teach the truth. Jesus said, go into all the world, preach the gospel to everyone, telling them not just to believe, but to obey everything I've commanded you. Are you obeying what Jesus commanded? Do you know what Jesus commanded? Most people don't even know.
Right.
They know the Ten Commandments. They have no idea Jesus made commandments. Yeah, like some 40, 50 commandments. Have you listened to them?
Do you know? No.
I promise you, the majority of people listening to me right now have no idea what Jesus commanded. No idea. Because they don't read the Bible. Or they read pieces of the Bible. They jump around. But they haven't actually sat and read the Gospels and learned what. That's what we're supposed to teach people. Do what he said to do. But we don't want to do. We want to feel. We don't want to think.
As long as it feels good.
We want to feel. We're just, everything's feeling, feeling, feeling. Feeling, feeling, feeling. And I'm telling you, there's going to be hell to pay someday. You heard it here. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Find yourself missing episodes of The Mark Gunger Show? No need to worry. Go to iTunes.com and download all of our podcasts, which are made available free to you, our loyal listener. Join Mark and co-hosts as they continue to discuss any and all issues concerning life, love, and marriage.
I'm looking respectable today with this tie.
You are.
I like this look. Maybe I'll,
you look good.
Maybe I'll keep doing this. I look like I'm something I'm not, which is educated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right. She wants to know, when is enough enough? I am a 25-year-old single mother to a 3-year-old boy. My parents, age 55 and 42, live with me, as well as my 18-year-old sister.
So your parents are younger than me.
Yes.
I'm getting old, man. Okay, go ahead.
I say they live with me and not the other way around because I pay for the rent, the power, the water, everything. They just moved from St. Louis to Wisconsin. So they moved in September.
Oh, she's from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Actually, they go to one of our campuses.
Ooh.
She said, I moved to, in September, got a job right away and saved money. The three of them moved up in November. Since then, my dad, who is an over-the-road truck driver, has gotten several paychecks that had a net pay of zero.
So how do you do that?
He must have had expenses or whatever. So what he made.
What
he
kind
made
of job is that?
I don't know. My mom has
it's health. Like working for me.
Yes. Yes. Almost. Except I lose on that deal. Oh, no. My mom has health issues.
She owes me at the end of the week.
That made it near impossible for her to work. So I've been carrying the weight for the last 5 months for all five of us. When he does get a check, they do pay half the groceries, and we take turns putting gas in the car. They share one car because the parents' car died.
Okay.
My mom watches the son, so that saves on daycare costs, so they're contributing when they can. My question is, when can I say that I'm done? I don't want to sound selfish, but this is more than I bargained for. God has more than provided for me financially to bear this burden in ways that I still don't understand, but now I would really like to move on.
Okay, but it just depends on what's really costing you here. For example, you to heat your house is going to cost you to heat your house pretty much whether they're there or not.
Yes.
You to put electricity
the
in your house.
Bills, water bills. Yes.
Pretty much static unless they're there just turning all the lights on all day long and running water in the tub all day long. There might be a kick up, but it's not dramatic. Yeah. And you are, in fact, saving with the daycare.
Yes.
So what is it you expect to save, unless it's just groceries?
Well, I think that she wants to know if she should kick them out and tell them to start fending for themselves. Like, if she just...
I understand that, but isn't there a net win for her? Unless she's just sick of her parents.
Maybe that's part of it. Because if she's providing childcare and they're helping when they can, it's not really costing
her
anything.
Like, I had my brother living with us for a while. It didn't really cost us anything.
Not a whole lot.
Well, you know,
Some,
48, you know, but we're not talking...
Right.
Countless thousands of dollars here, you know. And he didn't do anything.
No, he wasn't contributing a whole lot.
At least you're getting daycare out of it, which is expensive in and of itself.
Yes.
I think they would have to really run the AC and the heat up a lot all day long to even begin to cover what it would cost you for daycare.
Mm-hmm.
So she's making it sound like this is costing her money.
Yeah. I think it's more of the emotional cost that she's tired of taking care of.
She's a single mom.
That's why I read. That she's tired of.
Yeah, I would think that at some point her parents would get a clue, and maybe they're having a hard time right now. And the Bible does say respect your family, your parents, honor your father and mother, and it literally means to help them financially.
Mm-hmm.
It's really what it means.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like to hear that, but it's true. So I don't know. You know, talk to them. I would think that they're at some level they would want to get more stabilized and stuff.
Yeah.
And if your dad's having a hard time, I don't see the loss. At least when you come home, you have somebody to talk to, unless your parents are real jerks.
Mm-hmm.
Your version is you'll have no adult conversation when you come home and just a little rugrat, which I think would drive most people insane.
Yeah.
Nancy goes, yes.
Yes.
She needs to talk to a human being when you're an adult.
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. I guess we could ask her further, but I don't see how this is a loss to her.
No,
at
all. I don't really
either. It's got to be a net gain. How much is daycare now to watch a rugrat give? How much do you think in a month?
A couple hundred a week.
A couple hundred a week minimum. 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah, I don't know. All right, we'll be back right after this.
There's more here than what we're seeing. A divine conspiracy.
Ooh, I like that.
That you, an angel lovely, could somehow fall for me. You always be love's
great. Divine conspiracy. Very romantic.
The flattered fool,
bit of nonsense, but that's what everybody's waiting for, a divine conspiracy.
Yes.
God's going to make it all work. Oh, dear Jesus, how do people get so far from the truth? The truth is because people don't read the Bible.
And they listen to songs like that.
The single greatest thing you can do to change your life and improve your life dramatically, read the Bible. Just read the Bible. And I'm not saying start in Leviticus in the Old Testament. Start with the New Testament. Just read it. Listen. Ross was pointing out the other day that most of Paul's writing wasn't deep theological. So there's parts of it that were deep theological, but they're really kind of far in between. Most of it was just a behavior modification.
Yes.
You guys were heathens. Stop it. Don't.
Stop this. Don't
stop
do that.
Stop this. Don't,
do
don't
this.
Steal. Work for a living. You know, love your wife. Mm-hmm. Respect your husband. Obey your parents. Be nice to your employees. Mm-hmm. Gather together. Don't quit gathering together in churches as some people are doing. I mean, a lot of us just, this is how you live life.
They're letters to the people where they heard about the gospel, and he went back dealing with potential issues that were continuing to arise after they heard the truth.
Yeah, the gospel that you can be saved through Jesus Christ. You can't earn it yourself. You get it through him. So they got that. That wasn't their problem.
Yes.
Their problem. Some of them are still living like hell. That was their problem.
Here's a theory that I have about people who don't read the Bible. I think a lot of people really do think that the New Testament in particular is written to non-believers.
That's what they say.
I think a lot of people think that all of that stuff in the New Testament is the Bible guys talking to non-believers.
It's not.
It's not. All of those, if you go to the beginning, it says that.
To the church here or to the believers there. Yes.
That it's all of it's written. But I think they think, because they want to quote it all the time to people who aren't churchgoers, who aren't believers, I think that that's what the majority of people think. I don't think they get that it was written for us. I don't think they understand that.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, weird.
I don't know.
All right, what else
you got? Here's a real quick, short question. Is it okay to drink alcohol and be a Christian?
Yes. Signed, Ross.
I hope so.
Signed, Ross Allen Skorzewski.
No, okay, I'm good with that, but I just said I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so.
There's other people that would say no.
Well, they're just wrong. They're just wrong.
The Bible doesn't say you can't drink.
It says you can't get drunk.
Yes, I know that.
The mental gymnastics you have to go through to believe that the Bible was talking about grape juice when it comes to wine is absurd. But people are they're hell-bent, and they're going to do say whatever they want.
Does the Bible say you can't grab a man by the stones?
Yeah, that it does say, yeah. But it doesn't say. Jesus turned water into wine. These people actually have the intellectual limitation in their brains to actually insist he turned it into grape juice. Well, first of all, go ask any Jewish guy. Do they serve grape juice at weddings? Or do they serve wine?
Yes.
It's a simple thing. It's not like we're talking some weird cult that doesn't exist anymore. Go to any conservative Jewish rabbi and say, is it okay for Jews to drink wine? He'll look at you like you're an idiot. And then he'll say, of course it is. When they had weddings 2,000 years ago, did they drink grape juice or wine? He'll look at you like an idiot. But he'll say, well, of course. Ask them when they take the Passover. In fact, you can go and you can buy Passover wine in a store right now. It's Passover wine. When Jesus had wine at the Passover, it wasn't grape juice.
So who did this? At what point in history did this come in?
Oh, it came with evangelical Christians, you know, who at the turn of the century were the ones who pushed for prohibition.
And
Christians today, evangelical churches still never apologize for prohibition. It has been the one thing that really weakened the church. You have to remember that, historically speaking, the greatest, strongest voice, one of the strongest voices in affecting people's opinions for a good 100 years or so was the Christian church. I mean, it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Well, then about the 1930s, 40s, do you notice hardly anybody's listening to the church anymore? Do you know what had just happened? The church pushed for prohibition, made fools of ourselves, and then they had to repeal it. And almost from that moment on, people quit listening, set it up for the 50s and the 60s, and we've been going to hell in a handbasket in this country ever since. And what Christians have not had the courage to admit, especially evangelicals, some do, I'm allowed to do now, because anyone who's remotely intelligent, and I talk to pastors who are part of denominations like the Assemblies of God, who know they can't take it. Mm-hmm. But you ask them, do you think Jesus drank wine? They say, well, of course he did. Do you think there's anything wrong with it? No. He says, I can't because I made a promise.
Right.
So they're men of character. They mm-hmm. lived up to their promise. But only very uneducated people. This was really driven by, you have to remember, Pentecostalism and fundamental Christianity in the 50s and 60s were really, by and large, made up of people on the other side of the tracks. They were low income, lowly educated people. They really were.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding? There weren't very many, you know, most of these churches were just tiny, tiny churches.
The Pentecostal movement, you're saying?
Pentecostal movement, even?
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, these, you know, the real hardcore holiness people and stuff like, it wasn't until the revival that kicked into the Jesus people, then the spiritual renewal in the late 70s, 80s, and then the churches started, now we got these big churches.
Yeah.
When I grew up, there was I'm from Wisconsin. There was a church my size, 3,500 people in Wisconsin. It was unheard of, unless you were Catholic or Lutheran. You know, evangelical church. Now in the South, it's a little bit different, but they got a longer history.
Azusa Street Revival around that time was that more?
Azusa Street was the 1900s, but even then, but if you look historically, and I think most people would admit, most of these people were, it's like the Bible says, not many mighty, not many noble were called. Mm-hmm. They weren't by and large highly educated people. So some holiness preacher comes along who bought into this whole, abstinence from alcohol thing came along. Well, everybody they just keep quoting it. Mm-hmm. They don't really think. Mm-hmm. Well, they keep fighting a concept that was taught to them, but they're not thinking. There is no evidence anywhere that what the Jews drank at at Passover, and all the stuff that Jesus did was grape juice. It's absurd. Wine. There is zero evidence anywhere in history that was such a thing. And stop and think about it. When Jesus turned the water into wine, they all said, "Wow, you saved the good stuff to last." Now, the only time people even talk in those terms is when they talk about wine.
Yes.
To this day, there's a real difference between cheap wine
and the good stuff.
Ooh, the good stuff, the expensive stuff, the $50 bottle stuff that I bought back in
that was quite California. Quite nice.
At December, that's Christmas.
Yes.
That was, man, I bought six bottles of, $300 I dropped. This was incredible stuff. It tasted fabulous. Nobody was getting drunk, but I mean, it was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Nowhere in the history of mankind has anybody taken grape juice and go, "Wow, this is the really good stuff. You really saved the good stuff to last." I mean, it just defies logic, people. They accused Jesus of being a drunkard. Why would they do that if he drank grape juice? They're not thinking. They don't think.
No. Exactly.
Just someone told them. It's absurd. Paul said,
"Can't take it literally.
Do not be filled with too much wine."
Right.
Well, if it's grape juice, why would there be a warning?
Exactly.
It was
there
wine.
There wouldn't be.
Well, you don't want drunken. Well, how much grape juice do you got to drink before you get drunk? I mean, it's so stupid. So anyway, this idea that Christians should not drink alcohol is patently absurd, and it is almost exclusive. Listen to me. Listen to me. It is almost exclusively an American Christian concept. Once you leave America, you go to Christians in Europe. They drink wine, beer. They don't have any problem with it. And I'm talking Baptist, Pentecostal. They don't have a problem with it. You go to almost anywhere in the world. They all drink alcohol. All of them. Go to South America. They all drink. They don't have a problem with this. Unless they've been a real Americanized church that was planted, and then they don't. But by and large, their cultures all do it, and they don't have a problem with it. I've been with this. Pentecostal pastor down in Brazil, man. We're drinking a beer and having a great time praising God. All right? It's America. I'm telling you, it's because the church went down this rat hole of prohibition in the early 1900s, which brought huge embarrassment to the church and weakened the church and no longer. And now we have to work to get our credibility back. But for decades, I'm talking 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, people have just quit listening to the church because we're just crazy. Yep. We embarrassed the entire nation in front of the world with the stupidity of prohibition. Making something, the church went to the mat.
Well, and some still hang on to it.
I know, but they went to the mat for something that's not biblical. Yep. Yeah. They talk about political capital and stuff. Mm-hmm. You got to be careful you don't spend.
Mm-hmm.
The Christian community, we spent almost all of our capital on prohibition, only to be humiliated. And it ended in an absolute objective failure. By anybody's measurement, it was a complete failure and a disaster. And the country had to you know how hard it is to get a constitutional amendment?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible, people. So they got it, and then they had to go through it again in 7 years to repeal it.
Jeez.
We are not talking some small deal here. And this was pushed by Christians who made a point of something the Bible does not say. And it weakened the church, and it's one of the reasons we're in such a mess and why the country's been such a mess. The church lost its legitimacy to millions of Americans when we made such fools of ourselves along this line. So to answer your question, is it okay for a Christian to drink alcohol? Yes, it is. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more after this beer.
Finally, marriage advice that's direct, honest, and to the point. This is The Mark Gunger Show on MarkGunger.com.
Remember the airport dropping me off? We were kissing goodbye and we couldn't stop.
I feel bad because you missed your
flight. We couldn't stop. There we go again.
She missed your flight.
We can't stop. If I feel it, I can't stop.
Let me know how that turns out for you.
Yeah. I'm telling you, we become a nation. There, that's a quick ending.
Boy, fade. No,
fade.
No.
No, don't cut fade. blame the machine. It's Timmy. Yeah. It's Timmy the Axe Murderer. But we become, I keep saying this over and over again because it's just true. Yeah. We don't think. We feel. We don't think. We feel. The reason people do all the destructive things in their lives is because they feel it.
They follow their feelings.
If I feel it, then you have to do it. And in fact, if there's anything that's really negatively spoken against, is repressing your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because of these almost demon-possessed, you know, psychiatrists and psychologists who've told us the worst thing you can do is repress your feelings. You're insane. Of course you need to repress your feelings.
Oh, yes. On a daily basis.
It depends on what we're talking about here. But by and large, there's this thing that if I feel it, I have to do it. And if I don't act on my feelings, it's not healthy for you. And I know of guys, they've told me that the psychiatrist or psychologist they were going to told them, you need to go have an affair. If you want to improve your marriage.
Oh, sure.
You need to go screw somebody else's wife so that you can spice up your marriage. Now, how they connect those dots is beyond me. But these are people because if you say, well, you know, I feel really tempted by other women and stuff. Well, you really need to act on that. This is healthy for you. You need to go have your affair. And it's destroying people's lives. It's like, you know, I couldn't have, we couldn't stop. Don't tell me you, we chose not to stop. Mm-hmm. I can handle that.
Yeah.
And if you say, Pastor, I had an affair, we're doing it, and we didn't want to stop. I understand that.
Yes.
Okay. Then let's make it right. Let's confess it.
But don't say
let's
you
repent.
Can't.
But the minute you tell me in any way, shape, or form that I couldn't help it because I felt it, then I have no respect for you. And I will attack you. And I will criticize you. I will castigate you. These porn guys. I can't help it. I don't want to look at porn. I can't help it. I can't help but masturbate. Really? Little porn gnomes come down and drag
turn
them out of
the computer.
Bed, screaming. I can't help it. The gnomes got me. As I said before, not to be gross, but it's not like masturbating doesn't take a certain amount of energy. You got to work at it.
There's something required of you.
You got to really work. Nobody's making you do this.
No. It's not like you belched.
It's not like you fall off. You know, if I'm walking along and I trip and I fall on the floor, mm-hmm. I couldn't help it. I tripped. I fell. Right. I didn't want to fall. Nobody wants to fall. If I'm working on the roof and I'm adjusting my satellite dish and I lose my footing and I fall off the... Well, I fell. I couldn't help that. Yeah. That's how people come to sexual
sins. And it's not
sins.
True.
It's not the same.
You have
I couldn't
to
help
get
it.
To a place.
Yes, you can.
You have to turn the computer on. You have to drop your drawers. You have to whatever, all that's in.
You have to go after the woman. You have to touch her. You have to kiss her. You have to start going across the line you shouldn't cross.
Yes. Mentally,
I get you want to do it. Yeah. Yep, I understand it. I got no problem understanding. I would like to do that.
Want
I get it.
I just don't.
Different. We all feel that. But don't tell me you couldn't help it. That's what ticks me off. Because everybody said, well, they're addicts. They're sex addicts. I don't know. Listen, I'm sure there's an addiction to it. I do.
And you get addicted to the buzz and you really chase that.
But still, you've got to do it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just happen.
There's steps that you have to take and action that you take.
And people say, if
there.
I feel it, I have to do it. No, you don't. Who is the lady who says, you know, I feel attracted to another woman.
And that she's
Am
been
I gay?
Suppressing the feelings for all these years.
I don't know if you're
years.
Gay or not. Just don't do it. Which is radical to people. You think in a secular world, the secular world heard me saying this right now, they'd think I'm out of my mind.
Yes. Oh,
if
yes.
you feel like you want to have sex with a man, you have to do it.
You got
to
do it. Makes you
or
happy.
If you want to feel like you want to have sex with a cow, you got to do it. If you feel it, I mean, it's just whatever. There's no limit to these people. Whatever you feel, you have. No, you don't.
Because people think you have to do what makes you happy.
Well,
and then Christians think
anarchy.
God wants you to be happy.
That's the thing. That's moral anarchy, which we've created today. Because what we have done is we have made feelings the number. That has become God. What God said is of little to no significance.
Mm-hmm.
Even among Christians, at the end of the day, what God said almost doesn't even fit into the picture.
Right.
They don't even take the time to find out what God said. Their God is their feelings.
Yep.
If they feel they want to commit adultery, they have to do it. If they feel like lying, they have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If they feel like divorcing their spouse and getting another one, who happens to be better looking, coincidentally,
mm-hmm.
well, they have to do it. Some of them even say, well, it's God's will. I prayed about it.
Oh,
I mean, the delusion goes on and on and on. But what they've done is they have made feelings their God instead of the God of heaven. And that's why on this show, this is the anti-feeling show. We take into no account at all what people feel, which seems like a pretty brutal show. But listen, I think we have plenty of the feeling shows out there, okay? I think
go find
just,
one.
If you don't just wait till the, you know, you can get pretty much 24/7 of shows that are overwhelming. Not in the Christian world of just how feeling and concern how people feel, and we don't want to make people feel that. Well, there's plenty of that. It's not like you don't aren't getting any of it. This is the one show that comes along and says, "We don't care what you feel. We don't care." And that's the premise of this program. It is advice sans feeling. Seen feelings. We don't care about the feelings. We take the feelings out of it. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Have a marriage dilemma? Email your questions to radio@markgunger.com, and Mark can answer them during one of our shows.
I hate you all.
You would really hate us if you, you actually heard saying? What we said.
We were looking for
I
a reaction.
I was in my nothing box.
Oh yeah? No, you were not. You were
I was in something box. I was in a particular box, and I didn't have time to listen to you rattle.
You didn't. It's too bad because you missed
it
a good one.
It was us. We should be important to you.
You should.
We should, but we're not. We know our place.
All right, what do you
got? Let's be honest. She says, I just found out my husband is seeing a prostitute.
Lovely.
A couple of weeks ago, he told me he loves me, but guess what? He's not
in love with me. Which is a sign of stupidity.
We have a basement apartment, which we rent out to help pay tuition for me to go to school. Last month, a new person moved in. Turns out she is the prostitute that he is seeing. I confronted them tonight and told her to move, and he says that he's moving out. I have no idea what to ask, but I can't tell anyone I know. OMG, what do I do?
You let him move out. There's no question here.
Yes.
Why is she even questioning this?
He moves out.
Well, and so why is there a question?
Well, he wants to move out, so I'm sure that she's afraid he's just going to leave and leave with the prostitute and leave.
Kick him out. Mm-hmm. You silly girl. Have a little respect for yourself. The man is screwing some other woman for money, bringing potential diseases into your life.
Oh, yes.
This could kill you. Have you a clue at all? The prostitute could have AIDS. Your husband will get AIDS and give it to you, and then you will die a miserable death.
Do they have kids?
They're older, 55 and 46. She has two children from a previous marriage, but they're in their 30s and they don't live there.
You kick him out. It's just, you know what? The fact that he has to say he's leaving is absurd.
Yeah, I would confront him and I would say, you are out of
leave.
Here. It wouldn't
you
be.
You tell him to get out.
Okay, I'm leaving.
You're out of here and expose him to all his friends and his family. Everybody.
Well, she says she doesn't want to tell anyone. I can't tell
you
anyone.
You are scream from the rooftops. Why can't she tell anybody?
That's just what she says.
You are out of your ever-loving mind, woman.
I'd be telling everybody.
What is the matter with
I'd
people?
I'd be screaming from the minaret.
This is
man.
A woman who has no self-esteem and is clueless. She is as clueless as she possibly can. Get her address if you can and send her the Butt Kicking Women DVDs.
Okay.
Maybe, on the wild chance of maybe, she'll get a clue. Good grief.
I'd be like.
Her husband with a prostitute and she can't tell anybody. What do you mean you can't tell anybody? See, I'm telling you, I tell you guys all the time, all that is necessary for a man to act badly is a woman like this. He knows he has a woman. He can be with a prostitute, and he is safe.
Right.
He knows he's safe with a prostitute. Why? Because she won't do anything about it and won't tell anybody.
I'd tell everybody. I'm
That's
not lying.
That's why these guys do this stuff. These women don't understand. They empower these horrible men in their lives. He treats you like this because because he can, and you allow it.
Evening call to prayer. I'd be knocking that guy that saying, ha, Tommy so-and-so is sleeping with a prostitute, violating marital rights.
That's right. That blasted
off the billboard.
I'd have it on a billboard.
Jeez.
Honestly, no wonder these guys treat you so badly. And she thinks her problem's her husband. He's a problem. There's no question.
Yeah.
But your real problem, go look in the mirror. That's your problem. That lady you're looking at in there, go look at her. That's your problem.
Well, and who knows, for all the years they were together, what else he did that he knew he could get away with bloody murder.
What in the world is she thinking? I can't tell anybody.
I don't know.
Her husband is with prostitutes, and she can't tell anybody. What is she? Did you ask her?
She has no self-esteem.
Oh, I don't. There's no sense.
I didn't ask her what she was thinking.
She'll listen to this. She'll be depressed and cry for hours and still not change. Send her the DVDs if she'll give you her address, and then maybe we can help her.
Maybe.
But this is a plague. It is a, you know, I do these conferences, butt-kicking women conferences. Mm-hmm. People ask me, why do you do this? What's your point? To avoid stuff like this.
Yeah. It's an epidemic is what it really
you
is.
You have got to get these women.
They have to understand, you don't put up with prostitutes and porn and you know what? Girlfriends.
The one question, you know how you guys fix this stuff? All you women who, all these women, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Ask yourself. Ask them. What would your pastor, what would your church do if your pastor did that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you should do.
Run that question through.
So, my husband's drinking every night. What do I do? I don't know. What would your church do if your pastor did that? Well, we kick him out. There you go. My husband's looking at porn. What should I do? What would your church do with your pastor? Well, they'd confront him. That's what you do. That's how you know what to do. There's not different rules for the marriage bed. See you guys.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.